From KCPW in Salt Lake City, I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. Right now, if you want to take tracks from KCPW studios at the City Library to the Gateway, it'll cost you exactly nothing. Or if you're taking a bus from City Hall to Temple Square and your pockets are empty, again, that's okay. For years, Salt Lake City has had a free fare zone in the downtown core, a nod to tourists and business folk. But UTA says it's losing money on the current fare structure, and the mass transit provider wants to switch to distance-based fares. Essentially, you would pay based on how far you travel. The changes aren't imminent, but they do indicate a turning point in mass transit along the Wasatch Front. We'll talk about it this hour. Plus, an update on the massive City Creek development and what it's going to bring to downtown Salt Lake. All that and your calls coming up after the news. Good morning. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. Mass transit in the Valley is undergoing some growing pains. Some recent changes in bus routes have commuters confused and frustrated, and a proposal to scrap a flat rate fare and switch to ticket prices based on how far you travel is raising questions, like how would the changes affect low-income riders? Would the new structure discourage commuters from the suburbs? Today on the program, we're talking about public transportation along the Wasatch Front, and we invite you to join us. 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255, or you can send comments to cityviews@kcpw.org. And joining me this hour, Jerry Carpenter, spokesperson for the Utah Transit Authority. Thanks so much for being with us. And Soren Simonson represents District 7, the Sugar House area of Salt Lake, on the Salt Lake City Council. Councilman Simonson, thanks to you.
Good morning. Thank you.
Later in the program, a discussion on the new City Creek development. But first, mass transit. Jerry Carpen, I want to start with you. The free fare zone. It's roughly between 5th South, North Temple, 2nd East to 400 West. It's been a fixture in getting around downtown Salt Lake City for many years. How many riders are served by free fare zone buses and trains right now? Do you know?
I don't have an exact number, but many thousands of people take advantage of the free fare zone every day. It's a fixture of downtown, as you mentioned. It was there before tracks. It was put in place back when we just had buses in the downtown area. And many people use it on their lunch hour to go to lunch or to shop at different areas of downtown while leaving their car at one location. So it has been something that's been well used, especially on tracks.
So thousands of riders means lots of revenue that you're missing. Is that why we're talking about maybe scrapping the free fare zone on buses and tracks downtown?
Revenue is only a small part of the equation. A lot of these folks that are using the free fare zone already have passes. They work in the downtown area. They commute into downtown from outside of the downtown area. There is some revenue cost to us, but it's minimal. And really, one of the main challenges for us is operational and how to ensure the safety and security of our system and also make it feasible for our operators to run buses and trains in the downtown area.
So has security been an issue? I mean, are you finding that a lot of people are just riding the bus because it's free, something to do?
Well, security is part of it. On the bus side, our main interest is operational. One of the challenges of having free buses in the downtown area is that it makes it harder for us to collect the fares for people traveling outside of the downtown area. We do what's called a reverse commute. Or excuse me, a reverse fare collection, where people just board on the bus. We don't know if they're going to get on and then off again in the free fare zone, and so they travel outside of the free fare zone. And then when they get off the bus, we're then collecting the fare. One of the challenges of that is that it's confusing to our operators. They have to try and keep track of who paid and who didn't. Mm. It also makes it an enforcement issue. Sometimes people will board the bus and then ride all the way, consume the service, and then at the end of the trip refuse to pay for it. And that makes a potential confrontation between the bus operator and the customer, or we just lose the fare. And so if we were able to even eliminate the bus portion of the free fare zone, we would be able to go back to collecting fares just the same way for everyone. It's less confusing to the customer, and it's easier for us operationally.
So is that why you are considering separating the free fare zone for buses and the free fare zone for tracks? Is that part of the reason?
That's the primary reason that we've brought it to the city. It is a joint agreement. It's part of our interlocal agreement, so it's a joint decision. It's not just a UTA decision. It's not just a city decision. It has to be something that we both agree upon. Early in the discussions, the city expressed strong reservations about taking away the tracks free fare zone, but less concern about the bus portion of it. And so we're talking about possibly eliminating the bus portion and keeping the tracks portion of the free fare zone, at least for the time being.
Councilman Simonson, is that the city's dog in this fight? It's an interlocal agreement, and you have a lot invested in the service that UTA provides to Salt Lake City.
Sure. I think of all of the cities within the UTA system, Salt Lake City's probably made more investment from our general fund in making this transit system successful and work. We've invested heavily in tracks. We've invested in some bus infrastructure, but probably more so in the rail projects. We're investing very heavily right now in streetcars, which will soon be part of the inventory of this regional transit system.
And is that a UTA project, the trolley system?
It's a joint project. Salt Lake City and South Salt Lake initiated the project, but UTA is a very important partner in it.
Okay. So, Councilman Simonson, how do you feel about this sort of piecemeal approach, separating the free fare zone for buses and then having a free fare zone for tracks and kind of separating those two out?
Well, Jerry talked a little bit about the confusion, probably less so with tracks because it's a different kind of fare system that you use when you get on and get off. But I, you know, I'm a transit rider myself, and I've been challenged in the 20 years I've lived in Salt Lake City and used transit pretty consistently. Initially, it was very confusing, you know, trying to remember when you pay when you board and when you pay when you get off. And so that can be very confusing for riders, especially those that don't use the system regularly. For me, the issue is really one of equity. I get not only from my constituents in Sugar House, I get a lot of requests, you know, why do we have this free fare zone downtown but not in other places where we may need it just as much, if not even more? And a lot of cities around the valley say, why does Salt Lake City get a free fare zone and Sandy doesn't or West Valley doesn't? And arguably, there are more people living in poverty in West Valley and South Salt Lake than there are in the downtown. And so, you know, if we're using poverty and income levels as a gauge for the need for the free fare zone, I don't know that it's really serving the population that we're intending it to.
So, Jerry Carpenter, I guess the question is, why not just overhaul everything at once? Why kind of do a little here and a little there and have riders thoroughly confused on when they can ride free and when they can't and what the rates are? Why separate it?
Well, that's always a concern. We want to make things as simple as possible for our customers. That's something we're always striving for and working toward. You know, initially our proposal to the city was to eliminate the free fare zone altogether, and there were some strong reservations about that. And it is less of a problem for us operationally on tracks than it is on buses, and so we thought if we could at least simplify things on the bus side of it. Bus and tracks riders are really different populations for the most part if they're coming into and leaving downtown on bus versus tracks. So it should be a fairly simple transition if we were to accomplish this change.
We're speaking with Jerry Carpenter. He's the spokesperson for the Utah Transit Authority. Also with us, Salt Lake City Councilman Soren Simonson. And we invite you to join us. How would getting rid of the free bus service downtown or basing fares on the distance affect your commute? Give us a call, 801-355-TALK. That's 801-355-8255. Or again, you can send comments to cityviews@kcpw.org. What is UTA hearing from riders? What do they want? Have you done some surveys or some outreach, public meetings? What do people want from their public transit?
Well, the thing that people want more than anything is convenience, ease of use, and a fair price to ride tracks. Certainly, there are lots of different opinions about subsidies and those sorts of things, but really, our main competitor is the automobile. And in order to get people out of their cars and onto public transportation, you have to make it convenient, reliable, and inexpensive. And so that's always the balancing act that we're looking toward. We have to have revenues to pay for operations, but at the same time, we need to make it truly competitive with the car.
And are you winning on that account?
You know,
how's your ridership?
Our ridership is going up. It's up quite a bit this year compared to last year, especially on tracks. When we opened the two new tracks lines, our ridership on tracks jumped about 30% just the first month of service. So definitely people are embracing the new mass transit options. But system-wide, even with some of the bus cuts that we were required to make, our ridership in August was up quite a bit over the prior year.
I want to talk about the distance-based proposal. How exactly would that work?
Well, it's important to understand this is very conceptual at this time.
Sure.
We've been talking about distance-based fare for a long time, many years now, and taking some of the initial steps towards achieving it. What happened recently is we just completed a fare study where we really took a look at the financial and long-term picture. If we were to switch from our current flat fare to a distance-based fare, how would it affect us as an agency? We ran a number of different scenarios, and what we found was that if we stick with our current flat fare and just raise fares periodically like we've done historically, eventually it will affect our ridership. The pricing will be too high. Less people will ride. We'll be able to achieve our revenue goals, but our ridership will drop off. Or, on the reverse hand, if we lower our fares, our ridership goes sky high, but we can't achieve our revenue goals to try and afford to put more new service on the road. The interesting thing about this is when we looked at different distance-based scenarios, we found that we could achieve both our ridership and our revenue goals. So we'll have more money to put more service out there, but we'll also be attracting more people to ride it. And that's really our main goal, is to get people out of their cars and onto public transportation.
We're speaking with Jerry Carpenter from Utah Transit Authority, also with the Salt Lake City Councilman Soren Simonson. 801-355-TALK is our number. And let's go to the phones. David is joining us from Salt Lake City. David, welcome.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I would just like the opinions of your guests. I'm a planning student at the U, and I was wondering what would their opinions be about reversing the fare, making it more expensive the shorter distance you rode in order to promote non-transit use of walking, cycling, and promoting transit use from further distances by making it cheaper. And I'll take my comments off the air.
Okay, David, that's an interesting idea. Soren Simonson, I want to get your thoughts on that. What about encouraging pedestrian travel, encouraging cycling in the city, and in order to do that, to make it not financially advantageous to ride the bus or to take tracks?
Sure. Well, the caller, David, proposes an interesting question. And quite frankly, I think that is more or less the system that we have today. Mm. You know, if I want to ride from my home to Westminster College, which I do frequently, unfortunately, I have a bus pass to do it. But if I want to ride that mile to the center of Sugar House, I have to pay $2.50 for a fare, which is the same cost as it is to ride a high-speed train in from Sandy that only makes limited stops. And so for me, that's a real equity issue. We certainly want people to be using all kinds of alternative transportation because our air quality problems are becoming so such a risk for people that live in the valley that we need to promote and use all of those forms of transportation. But I think the way that the system is set up right now with transit, it actually is a disincentive to use it for those short trips. And quite frankly, most trips that people take in their car are trips of less than 2 miles. Mm. Probably 75 to 80% of trips taken anywhere in the valley are just short distance trips. And so we would like to see a transit system that is part of that solution of enabling people to take economical and convenient and affordable short trips as well. And I think that's where this distance-based fare system can really work. People have in the past used transit in buses in the city have discontinued doing that as as the costs have gone up. But unfortunately, a lot of them are just driving their car instead, or you know, somebody else is driving. They may share a ride or something like that. So those things are good, but I think we want to provide the full range of alternatives in Salt Lake City. And unfortunately, as ridership declines in the city, as fares go up, we also lose transit service. And a lot of people that have lived historically along bus routes, as those bus routes have been discontinued because of declining ridership, we've lost a lot of really important routes in Salt Lake City as well. And so, you know, it's a real balancing act. But the bottom line is we want to have full access to as many alternatives to private automobiles, single passenger automobiles as possible. And transit's a really important piece of that puzzle.
I want to get to JD in Salt Lake City in a moment. But Jerry Carpenter, do you have anything to add to that idea of having this inverse fare system to encourage people to stay out of transit and to ride the bus or to walk or to take their bicycle?
I agree with the councilman that that's kind of the system we have today. There is a disincentive to pay a cash fare for a short trip and a strong incentive to take it for a longer trip. The important thing, too, is that many of our commuters are part of a mixed commute. They'll ride their bike for a few blocks, put it on a bus, ride it for a distance, and then get off the bus and ride it to their workplace. So many people are already taking advantage of multiple forms of transportation, and mass transit really is a critical part of the multimodal transportation system that we are trying to build here today.
Hmm. David, thanks very much for the call. 801-355-TALK is our number, and we'll go to JD in Salt Lake City. JD, welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
How you doing?
Good, thanks. Go right ahead.
Good. I'm a broken record on the same thing I've said for years, and they said, oh, that can't be done. How come we don't have a Rose Park circulator bus that goes around and can actually get people from apartment buildings to supermarkets to hair salons and back? And I'll take my answers off the air, but I also suggest that they could just sit in their cars on a Saturday morning and watch all the ladies going from the apartment complexes and walking with their strollers to Smith's. And maybe a light will go off and make it say, oh, wow, how come a bus isn't going between those two buildings?
All right.
But anyway, that's my comment.
Thank you so much for the call. JD's point, a West Side bus loop that would take people. How is UTA serving Rose Park and west side of Salt Lake right now?
Well, we do have a number of buses that go to the west side that serve both the downtown area and Redwood Road and the Rose Park area. One of the biggest challenges always for us is having enough revenue to put the kind of service we want out there. With the economic recession, our revenues are down $70 million over pre-recession projections. We've had to really tighten up ship. And part of that was cutting some of our service. That was only a portion of the cuts we made, but we did have to cut some service. And we're always looking for the most efficient service possible. You want to have, if you're going to make cuts, you want to cut low ridership, off-peak, and a redundant service or duplicate service first and foremost, and that's what we've done. So our actual investment per rider has really improved over the past couple of years because of this tightening up that we've had to do. You know, as we transition to a distance-based fare and we're able to achieve some of our revenue goals, our hope is to put more service on the road. And we're going to be looking at areas where there's definitely going to be a demand and people are going to ride it, because if we're going to put service out there, we want people, the service to be where it's going to serve the greatest number of people.
Mm. Jerry Carpenter is with us. He's the spokesman for the Utah Transit Authority, also Salt Lake City Councilman Soren Simonson. And we're talking public transit this hour. What do you think about distance-based tickets? 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255, or you can send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. We need to take a break, but we'll be right back. This is City Views on KCPW Salt Lake City. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. Today on the program, we're talking about rethinking bus fare and tracks lines. UTA would like to scrap free bus service downtown. What effect would that have on low-income residents, tourists, business riders? Give us a call. 801-355-TALK is our number. 801-355-8255, or you can send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. Joining us on the program, Jerry Carpenter, spokesperson for the Utah Transit Authority, also Salt Lake City Councilman Soren Simonson. And let's go to the phones. And Chad has been waiting from Salt Lake City. Chad, welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I understand the situation that is put forth that ridership has to be justified for routes to be made. But what I'm noticing is we kind of stopped short, I think, on the tracks line going out to the airport, when the International Center is not that much further, and there's thousands of people that work there on varying schedules throughout the entire day. But currently there's only the three or four buses in the morning and the three or four buses in the evening that service that entire area. Wouldn't it be feasible that if you open up an increased ridership in that area because you would have more routes available in that area?
So you're talking about transit to beyond the airport, the International Center?
Yes.
Okay. I suppose that is a question for Jerry Carpenter. Thanks very much, Chad, for the call.
Thanks for asking your question. Service to the International Center has really been a challenge for us at UTA. As you mentioned, there are a lot of people that work out there, but they work on varying schedules. And when you're trying to provide a bus service, you want to provided at the times of day specifically that you're going to get the highest amount of ridership. We have had service there, more service in the past when we were forced to make some changes and reduce some of our service. That was one of the areas that did get some reductions in service. It's really, really hard to, if you've got limited revenue, to run bus service all hours of the day to an area that has varying shifts and pick up only two or three people a trip when you have other areas where you can carry, 30 or 40 people a trip that could benefit from those same operational dollars. So these are difficult challenges. And, there are plans in the future to extend either tracks or bus rapid transit into that northwest quadrant west of the airport and connect up eventually with the Mountain View Corridor, bus rapid transit, and future plans on 5600 West. But that's a long ways away. As the area grows and we have more money to put service on the road, certainly the International Center is a prime location, provided we can do it reasonably and at a good cost.
Is that kind of westward ho transit system, is that on the city's radar?
Well, yeah, both relating to this call and the previous caller, one of the challenges is that UTA is a really outstanding regional transit service provider. The investment that they've been making in regional systems, the rail systems, commuter rail, light rail, streetcar that we're looking at now, even for some regional type service, is really important to the entire Wasatch Front area. The challenge is that we often have requests, like we've heard from these last two callers, for really local service. And it's tough sometimes to balance the regional needs with the local needs. And if you're only getting one or two riders, it's hard to justify extending routes and service to cover those areas when you've got lots of other areas that do generate much higher ridership. We just recently had a city council retreat, and one of the things that we talked about is how can we as a city invest in better local transit coverage, whether that's through partnership with UTA, through the University of Utah. We actually have two private transit systems in Salt Lake City. The University of Utah has one, and we have one at the airport. And maybe there's a way to use those systems to provide more localized service on both the east side and the west side, because those, the airport and International Center and the University of Utah, are really important destinations and magnets. And we currently have good transit service to those areas, as kind of a hub. But, covering the spokes with a localized service may be something that we can expand upon as a local jurisdiction.
Salt Lake City Councilman Soren Simonson is with us. Also, Utah Transit Authority spokesman Jerry Carpenter. 801-355-TALK is our number. Let's go to Paul in Salt Lake City. Paul, welcome.
Hi. I just wanted to make the comment that on the trash stations, you build these great big huge parking lots, and the parking lots are just clear full of cars, people driving the tracks. Why don't you offer a reduced rate for people who ride the bus to the track station then ride on the tracks into the town?
Two-tiered on that. Jerry Carpenter, what do you think?
I think that's what we're talking about with distance-based fare. We really want to create incentives for people to ride if they're shorter trips. Right now, it's just a flat fare. If you were to ride bus to tracks, you can transfer, and so that's an advantage. But ultimately, our goal is that we would charge people for the actual mileage that they travel. They would start at point A, whether it's on a bus or a train, and then end at point B with whatever mode of transit they took, and they would be charged for the actual miles that they traveled. It will be a much more equitable system. It will allow people who are traveling very short trips to benefit financially. And for those who are taking longer trips, they would probably pay a similar fare to what they're paying today.
Paul, what do you think?
Well, I think that you'll just have more people. You're going to have to build bigger parking lots at the track stations then. If you could have some way where they get a return trip or just something, because when I go to the track stations, the parking lots are full and you see the buses coming in and out of there and hardly anybody taking them.
Is that extra parking part of the equation, Jerry Carpenter?
Well, that's always one of the challenges. We build to what we project will be the demand for parking. In some places, we're at capacity or exceeding capacity, and so how do you meet that demand? Encouraging people to ride buses is definitely one of the ways to do it. And the way to attract people to ride buses is to make it convenient and reliable and affordable. One of the reasons people drive to tracks and ride tracks is because they know it's going to be there every 15 minutes. They know it's going to get them to work on time because it doesn't deal with traffic, and they consider it to be a cost savings over driving their car. So what we need to do really is to make the bus service just as convenient and reliable and inexpensive so that people will take advantage of that rather than driving. The main reason people drive to park and ride lots is because they don't feel like they have a convenient bus option to get there, and so that's part of our plan to expand the transit system in the future.
Paul, thanks very much for the call. I want to get back to this this point that some are making, that if you dispense with the free fare zone, that it will really hurt the people who need public transit the most, the people with mobility issues, low-income folks. Jerry Carpenter, can you respond to that criticism of the plan and why you think it would still work for these folks?
Well, the idea is that it would be a very low-cost fare with distance-based fare. It might only be a nickel or a dime or 25 cents for them to ride the same distance that they've been riding for free today. That said, we're also looking at ways to reduce costs for individuals who are in need. We currently offer a low-income discount. We offer passes at very low rates to homeless service providers. And so many of these people who don't have an income can have access either to a low-cost or no-cost transit pass or token or day pass as appropriate. So we believe that their transportation needs can still be met, and we hope to help them accomplish that. Going back to Councilman Simonson's comment about equity, there are needy people in every community, West Valley, Sandy, West Jordan, Salt Lake City, everywhere in the valley, and going to a distance-based fare and charging a very low cost or providing low-income option, low-income discounts to those who can't afford to ride transit is really the better long-term solution than having just one 5 or 10 block free fare zone where many of those people may be able to get free passes anyway.
Councilman Simonson?
Hopefully, as we see City Creek Center come online in the next year, we'll see a shopping, a place to buy groceries in the downtown that's actually in the free fare zone. But, I've heard this argument a lot about those that are impoverished that really rely on the free fare zone. But The bulk of our housing that serves those that are in very impoverished situations are not within the free fare zone. We have many of them that are in kind of the extended downtown area, but they're not actually served by the free fare zone. And the places that they're going from and coming to, whether it's a place for a day job or employment or places to buy food or to receive other services, are also not necessarily in the free fare zone. And so unless you happen to be exactly within the boundaries of that particular district, you're not really being served by that service. And I would venture to guess that it's only a small handful of people that on a consistent basis are able to receive all of their transit needs within the free fare zone. And as I mentioned earlier, we have huge numbers of people in Central City, Salt Lake, and Sugar House, and neighboring South Salt Lake and West Valley that are not served by the free fare zone, that arguably in much larger numbers would benefit from having some sort of affordable service. You know, it may cost, the actual cost of the transit to go a mile or 2 miles may only be 50 cents. But when you have to pay $2.50 at today's transit, the recently increased cost, that's pretty steep. And so people have to find other ways to get around, or they'll try and get on and get off the system without being detected, which I know is sometimes a problem on the tracks line. It's a real challenge, and I agree with Jerry that there's a real equity issue, both with the current free fare zone that we have and also the fact that we don't have a distance-based fare system largely throughout the UTA system.
I guess what I hear you saying is that the free fare zone really benefits the business community. It's the lawyer who's going from his office to file something at the courthouse. It's the office worker who's going to a restaurant within two or three blocks. What are you hearing from that constituency, Councilman Simonson? Business leaders, are they saying, Let's go distance-based, or are they saying, wait a minute, we love the free fare zone?
There are a lot of people that use it, and there's no doubt that it has served us well in trying to get people that work in the downtown that are making these short trips to take advantage of that. I think a lot of people find that the block or two blocks that they're going just for lunch, they can walk just as fast or faster than they can if they wait for the next train or the next bus.
Unless they're wearing heels.
Unless they're wearing heels or if the weather's inclement.
Right.
It's definitely a very important piece. But if the actual cost for using transit is only a dime or a quarter to go those couple of blocks anyway, I don't think it will discourage people from using it. But if we have that same kind of service in West Valley City Center or in downtown Sandy or in Sugar House or many other places that people are looking for that same kind of service, I think we'll do a much better job across the board at providing affordable, convenient, efficient service for everybody, including those in the downtown. And as Jerry mentioned earlier, a lot of people already take advantage and have bus passes. And so, you know, that cost is kind of built into the service that they're already using. So they may be using transit within the free fare zone, but even if the free fare zone wasn't there, I think a lot of folks would still have similar or identical service to what they have today.
Just got a couple of minutes left. Soren Simonson, I wanted to ask you something about City Creek. You mentioned that City Creek, of course, this big redevelopment project in the city core, will be opening in the spring. If you get rid of the free fare zone, how is that going to affect the shopping centers and that opening?
I don't know that the free fare zone will affect City Creek at all. Although City Creek has been touted as a transit-oriented development, there's 5,000 parking spaces underneath it. And so the idea is that we want people to be able to get to City Creek from everywhere in the region as conveniently as possible. So if you're coming by commuter rail, if you're coming by tracks, if you're coming by bus, if you're coming by bicycle, if you're coming by car, City Creek, if you're walking from a few blocks away, City Creek will be highly accessible from any mode of transportation. I don't think the free fare zone will really have any significant impact. And in fact, a distance-based fare may make it easier for people going short distances to City Creek, say from the west side or the east side of Salt Lake or from very neighboring communities, will actually make it more accessible to have a distance-based fare that is affordable if you're only going 3 or 4 miles to the downtown.
Jerry Carpenter, Any thoughts to add on that one?
I absolutely agree. And, you know, transit-oriented development, as City Creek has been referred to, really works both ways. There are going to be many people who live in the City Creek development who may park a car in that garage, but then will be able to access other destinations. Maybe they live there and work somewhere else, and they'll be using transit to go to work. Maybe they're going to go out to a game at Rio Tinto Stadium or to the Maverick Center for a concert, and they'll be using public transportation instead of driving their car. So the advantage of having developments, mixed-use developments like City Creek near public transportation, is that it gives people a reason to live, work, and play in one area, but also not have to depend on a car to get everywhere else that they want to go.
Final question for you, Jerry Carpenter. You mentioned that this is an idea. This distance-based fare structure is just conceptual at this point. Where do you go from here?
Well, right now it is in the planning stages. We are planning to move forward with distance-based fare. The big question is when. It will be at least 2 to 3 years before we successfully transition to distance-based fare. There's a lot that still needs to be done. We need to get out to the public. We're going to be doing surveys, focus groups, and then ultimately presenting proposals to the public to get their feedback on. Before we make any steps forward, we're going to engage the public in the process and find out what they really want out of a distance-based fare. And there are a lot of, you know, infrastructure, back-end technological things that will need to be put in place in order for us to transition as well.
And Councilman Simonson, is that soon enough for you?
Well, we certainly would like to see it as soon as possible. I know when we did one of our last interlocal agreements with the UTA Airport Tracks line, we talked about 2 or 3 year timeline, and that was about 2 or 3 years ago. So we know UTA is working on it. We will do what we can to encourage that to happen sooner than later, and I continue to be a strong advocate for it myself.
Soren Simonson, he represents District 7 on the Salt Lake City Council. Thanks very much for your time.
You bet. Good to
and,
be with you.
And Jerry Carpenter, spokesperson for the Utah Transit Authority. Thanks to you.
Thank you.
Up next, it's City Creek. It's in its final building stages. What will the shopping center bring to downtown? But first, we need to take another break. This is City Views on KCPW Salt Lake City. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Napier Pierce, and this is City Views. Local shopkeepers have pinned their hopes on it, and the LDS Church has poured millions, maybe $1 billion, into developing it. It is City Creek Center, a high-end shopping mall and condo development in the heart of Salt Lake City. City Creek is slated to open next spring, and joining me now to talk about what the finished City Creek will look like is Dale Bills. He's the Communications and Marketing Director for City Creek Reserve. Dale, thanks so much for being with me.
Good morning. Good morning.
Also, Linda Wardell. She's general manager of City Creek Center. That is the retail portion of City Creek. Linda Wardell, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having us.
And Jason Mathis, executive director of the Downtown Alliance. Thanks to you.
Always a pleasure.
How will City Creek affect your shopping habits? Give us a call, 801-355-TALK, 801-355-8255, or you can send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. Linda Wardell, I want to start with you. You've been in retail for 20 years. What makes City Creek so unique in the retail scene across the nation right now?
Well, we announced last week that there are 20 unique-to-market stores coming to City Creek Center. So certainly that's going to distinguish City Creek Center in the Salt Lake City market. Some of those unique-to-market stores include Tiffany, Michael Kors, and Coach. So certainly in Salt Lake City, there's a lot for shoppers to be cheering about right now. City Creek Center is also unique because it's part of a mixed-use development. People are asking, what does mixed-use development mean? That means that it's part of a project called City Creek, where there's office, residential, and retail components all mixed up and part of one fantastic project. I think City Creek Center is also unique because it truly is part of downtown rising. Jason Mathis is here and can certainly talk a lot about that. But truly, City Creek Center is part of Salt Lake City rising up and becoming a world-class city right here in downtown Salt Lake. And I think everybody I have talked to is really happy to hear that they're going to have their downtown back all over again. All of this construction is going away, and just a vibrant new city is coming back to Salt Lake.
I have to say, Tiffany & Company, Coach, Michael Kors, these are really high-end retailers. Is there a market for that here in Utah?
Well, I think these retailers have done their homework. Certainly, when they sign up for a project like this, these retailers know that they have a core group of customers, and they're already shopping in this market. With the advent of online shopping, retailers know that their customers are in the market. They're already purchasing. There's already some consumption going on. But, you know, it's really interesting when we look at retail projects across the United States. I think the moniker of luxury is really all in your own mindset. Tiffany & Company absolutely is a luxury brand. Michael Kors, absolutely, I can go with you that that's luxury. But Coach is more and more a commonplace brand. It certainly is fabulous merchandise. But I think it's something that when people look around, they can't believe that there hasn't been a Coach store in Salt Lake City before today. And so many of the brands that we announced, people are looking at them and saying, this has been missing in Salt Lake City for a very long time. So I don't want people to have the impression that City Creek Center is so upscale that it's unobtainable. There absolutely is going to be something at City Creek Center for everyone.
We're speaking about City Creek this morning. If you'd like to join us, 801-355-TALK or cityviews at kcpw.org. Dale Bills, why is the LDS Church, which owns this property, why is it making this huge investment in downtown?
Downtown Salt Lake City is our home. It's a place that we are committed to long term. It's an opportunity to revitalize the downtown core. Those are all things that we are committed to.
And Jason Mathis, what is the business community, the existing shopkeepers, what are they hoping City Creek will add to the scene downtown?
Well, it really is a catalyst for downtown development across the board. That ranges from small businesses. We've had 60 small businesses that have opened up in the past 2 years, many, I think, in anticipation of City Creek Center. So you've seen Main Street really come alive. I think a lot of people thought it was dead. It really has been resurrected, and that is continuing. We see the prospect of projects that have already happened, like 222 South Main or the renovation of the O.C. Tanner flagship store on State Street, even Gallivan Plaza that opened up this summer and the Leonardo. We've already seen a lot of stuff come on board, and we've got a lot of great stuff in the pipeline, everything from the Utah Performing Arts Center to a convention headquarters hotel to a public market, a streetcar system. So really, City Creek is a catalyst for all of this great downtown development. And when you talk to the people who built 222 South Main or O.C. Tanner, they say, we wouldn't have done it. If the LDS Church had not made this commitment, if Taubman had not committed to come to this market, if we didn't see this progress and forward lean in a really challenging economy, boy, we don't know if it would have made sense for us. But they've really inspired the rest of the community to step up to the plate and take a risk and really create that great city that Dale talked about. And boy, it is going to be amazing. We cannot wait. It's going to be fantastic for this community.
Setting aside the massive investment that the LDS Church has poured into this project, what kind of economic gain does downtown expect to see once this facility opens?
Well, and Linda's probably the expert here. I've heard 17 million visitors coming to City Creek Center. So those will be people coming into the downtown who have maybe stayed away for a while. People have been concerned about parking or traffic. I think a lot of those concerns will go away when this new facility opens up. It really capitalizes, too, on a lot of great assets that we have, things like the Utah Jazz. And they may not play this season, but I bet they'll be back next season when City Creek is up and running. Temple Square, the number one tourist attraction in Utah, the convention center, the hotels, the nightlife, all the other things that are going on downtown. From an economic perspective, it's really helpful for us in our corporate recruitment efforts. So Salt Lake City is now home to the second largest Goldman Sachs in North America. It's New York City and Salt Lake City. And they would not have come were it not for this commitment to downtown revitalization and redevelopment. And, you know, any community is either rising or falling. Nothing stays stagnant. Nothing stays the same. And it's great right now to be in an ascending cycle with – I don't mean that in an astrological way, but an ascending cycle for Salt Lake City, because it really is a great time. And it really is rising. That's not just a clever theme. It's truly the way that this community is – really what's happening in this community, and I think the people around the region should be excited about their urban center and what's happening down there.
801-355-TALK. If you have questions about the new City Creek that's opening next spring, give us a call. I don't mean to be the damper, but that's my job as the journalist.
You get
so,
to do that.
Tell me about the gateway. What is this development? Three blocks from City Creek? What is this going to do to what was supposed to be the development, the super mall in Salt Lake City? What's City Creek going to have? What kind of effect is it going to have on the Gateway?
Well, Gateway is a fantastic development, and it's been a mainstay for downtown. And we really do think of it as part of downtown as well. It's that mixed-use development that Linda talked about where there's some office, there's some residential and great retail. I think Gateway will undergo some transformations. As I said, nothing stays stagnant. Nothing stays the same. I think they'll reinvent themselves in some really positive ways. I don't want to put a damper on my other guests, but Gateway has some great advantages that City Creek Center doesn't have. They have a planetarium. They have the Children's Discovery Center. They have theaters. They're open 7 days a week. And I think Gateway will be just fine. I think it will continue to evolve, continue to change. And from our perspective, the Downtown Alliance is committed to doing everything that we can to help support Gateway and make sure that we manage this in a really successful way.
Do you see, Linda Wardell, do you see Gateway as your major competitor?
Well, I think that what we see is that downtown Salt Lake City is more successful for having both Gateway and City Creek Center. I think people are going to cross-shop both projects, and we think that is just fantastic. People are going to come downtown for a myriad of reasons, including things like Jason mentioned, for a Utah Jazz game or to go to the Capitol Theater. And what a great opportunity to have dinner at Gateway, do some shopping at City Creek Center, and then attend an event downtown. And Jason's absolutely right. There are things that are at Gateway that are never going to be at City Creek Center, like a theater, like the Discovery Gateway Children's Museum, like the planetarium. Those things are just never going to be at City Creek Center. The two centers are unique. They may have a slightly different demographic, but there absolutely is room in downtown Salt Lake City for both of these centers to be incredibly successful.
What do they call that in the business world? Synergy or something?
Absolutely.
801-355-TALK is our number. 801-355-8255. And let's go to the phones. And Miriam joins us from Salt Lake City. Miriam, hi.
Hi, first of all, Jennifer, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Just a quick question. With all the talk going on about UTA, with, stopping the free zone area and raising rate fares and cutting routes, how will that affect downtown?
Okay, Miriam, that was a segment that we addressed earlier in the hour, but Jason,
okay.
No. It's all related. It's all related to downtown. Jason Mathis?
They're definitely related. UTA let us know about a year ago that they were thinking about getting rid of the free fare zone throughout downtown, and we said not just no, but since we're on the air, I'll say heck no. I mean, we were really adamant about our concerns about that, and they were very responsive, and they said, okay, well, what is it that you need downtown? What is the free fare zone provide? And continuing free tracks is really important. That seems to be a mode of transportation that people feel very comfortable using downtown. And so continuing that into the long term is, I think, really important. One of the things UTA has talked about is when they get to fare-based or distance-based fares, that maybe they would take a look at that. So it might be, 25 cents to travel throughout the downtown area. I don't know exactly how that's going to work. I don't know exactly what they're planning there. Certainly it's something that we're willing to consider and look at. But we're very grateful that they're planning right now to keep tracks free in the downtown area. As Linda mentioned, we see that synergy between City Creek Center and Gateway as paramount, and really that connectivity of tracks lines going to both centers is important and something that we're very insistent on maintaining into the future.
Miriam, thanks for the call. 801-355-TALK. Something that Jason mentioned, one of the strengths of Gateway is the 7-day-a-week shopping cycle. And Dale Bills, I'm curious how hard it's been to attract national high-end retailers when you're not going to be open on a Sunday.
And maybe Linda might have something to say about this,
of
too.
Course.
But from the get-go, that's been a fundamental value of our ownership. It's a value shared by many people who live in Utah. So a 6-day-a-week operation has been on the table from the beginning of our planning.
Well, while we're on this subject of the LDS Church, perhaps you can talk, Linda Wardell, about liquor restrictions. I know that restaurants in City Creek are applying for alcohol licenses, but has that been a barrier at all in attracting, you know, top restaurants to the center?
Well, so far, we have had two restaurants, I believe, that it's come out in the news that there have been two liquor licenses awarded for City Creek Center. We've announced one restaurant that's definitely coming to our center, Texas Day Brazil. And I believe the CEO of Cheesecake Factory, we've not confirmed it, but the CEO of Cheesecake Factory has announced that he's going to have a restaurant at City Creek Center. So remember that we're the only official source for what's coming to City Creek Center, but the CEO of Cheesecake Factory is out there talking about
he's
coming.
He's a reliable source.
He may be a reliable source. But you know, clearly there are two restaurants that may have an inside track on the fact that they're coming to City Creek Center with liquor licenses. So clearly you're going to be able to come to City Creek Center, and if you choose to order a drink, you'll be able to do so with your meal. So I think that what our company has learned for our tenants who clearly are responsible for obtaining their own liquor licenses, there is a process to follow in Utah, and if they do so, they'll be able to obtain a liquor license.
Dale Bills, just very briefly, though, how does the LDS Church reconcile its, you know, mandate to abstain from drinking with having alcohol served on its property?
For a long time, the church has made plain that as far as public policy is concerned, there's no objection to responsible consumption by informed adults. And the restaurants where alcohol will be served will be owned by Taubman.
Many other issues to talk about, housing, transportation, parking. Sadly, we're out of time. So I'm going to have my guests return as this project moves forward. I want to thank them, though. Dale Bills, Communications and Marketing Director for City Creek Reserve. Thanks so much.
Great to be here.
Linda Wardell, she's General Manager of City Creek Center. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Jennifer.
And Jason Mathis, Executive Director of the Downtown Alliance. Thanks to you.
Look forward to coming back.
City Views is a production of KCPW with help from Eric Ray and Jesse Ellis. Ryan Cron composed our theme music. You can check out our website and continue the discussion online, kcpw.org. Check us out on Facebook and Twitter as well. Next time, Jeff Robinson is hosting a conversation about the Leonardo, a new science and art museum opening downtown. That's coming up tomorrow. For City Views, I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce.